Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Today, John Galloway and I have the amazing and extraordinary Miguel Diacaza, who is the founder of the Mono Project and opensource.net stack. Miguel, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. That's a great introduction. You're very kind.
Well, you've done some extraordinary things with the Mono Project, and I really want to get some time to talk with you about where things stand now. Let me just make sure that I said John Galloway is with us. Let's just make sure he's there. John?
No, I dropped off.
He dropped off. Too annoyed about not being introduced separately. John Galloway, developer evangelist for Microsoft and occasional co-host. And you two know each other already?
Oh, yeah. We first met in person at Mix06, I believe.
Yeah, John was still an independent developer. He wasn't working for Microsoft at the time.
I had a brain.
And we hung out together with Phil Hack. It was and Rob Conrad. And it was great meeting all of you guys at the same time.
Okay, now I'm jealous.
It was a good mix. It was a good conference.
So tell me about Mono and where things stand with Mono now.
So we just released our 3.0 release. And a week ago or so. And it basically brings the .NET 4.5 stack to both Linux and Mac. But I need to qualify that. We are actually focused these days only on the base class libraries, on all the elements that are not linked to the presentation layer. So our release contains the things that you would expect from the core assemblies, MS Core Lib, system XML, system data, that sort of thing. There's a little exception to this rule, which is that we bundled Microsoft's ASP.NET MVC 4. So it's probably the only piece of presentation layer that we bundle that actually is tracking Microsoft APIs. So thanks to Microsoft open sourcing all of these things, we actually bundle all of that with this release of Mono. So in addition to the work that we typically do as of re-implementing the API specs, this release actually contains a tremendous amount of Microsoft code. It contains Entity Framework. It contains ASP.NET MVC. It contains a fabulous Razor engine. And we shipped it for Linux and Mac. It serves also as the foundation for our Android and iOS products. And the kind of where we see Mono going is we're kind of breaking a little bit with the past. A couple of years ago, we're trying to bring the user interface, the presentation layers that Microsoft was building. We started with Windows Forms. We did ASP.NET. We did Silverlight for a couple of years. And we basically never started with WPF. We thought it was too much of an effort. It was too big of an effort. And although we managed to implement Silverlight 1, 2, and 3, 3.5, I would say, it was about 3 years of very focused effort on that. We felt that WPF was behind our scope. So kind of where we see Mono going these days is instead of bringing Microsoft presentation APIs to Linux and Mac, instead what we're doing is we're binding the native UI components of each platform. So on Linux, we bound GTK. On Mac, we bound Cocoa. On iOS, we bound CocoaTouch. On Android, we bound the Android APIs. So you should think these days of Mono more as a core language, the C# compiler with async support, and really independent stacks. So you basically need to write your UI once per platform. So it's not ideal. It's not the run, write once, run anywhere. You basically need to write a new UI for each platform, but it has the advantage that you get to exploit the benefits of every platform, to its maximum potential.
Didn't I see something at Monospace where somebody was doing something with a cross-platform UI layer that it was like XWT or something like that?
Yeah, so there's actually three stacks for doing cross-platform UI development. So let me talk about those. XWT is a replacement for a GUI toolkit for desktop computing. And the API is very well suited for that. It's an abstraction layer that you build. It's an API that you target. And on the back end, it decides whether it uses WPF, whether it uses MonoMac or GTK. What is interesting about XWT is that Xtodality initially was developed as a complement to an existing toolkit. So we wanted to take advantage of some native features on each platform. And the idea was, we didn't want to keep writing the code over and over and over. You know, one version for Linux, one for Mac, one for Windows. So XWT is our toolkit that grew out of this need of writing once and running anywhere. What happens is that when you create an XWT button, this button is actually backed by either a Cocoa button or a WPF button or a GTK button. So basically you will get native experiences on each platform. The other thing that we did with XWT is that it's not really a composable toolkit. It's not really a toolkit that can be used very much as a building block. Like for example, we don't try to provide a system where you could add to a button arbitrary elements and add images or maybe a bar chart inside your button. Instead, we try to keep it at a relatively high level. So there are buttons with specific meanings, like a button, a file chooser button, a color selector button, and each one of those is backed by native implementation details. So it's an API that we built for our own needs because we wanted to have our own tools look more native on each platform. We really didn't build it as a replacement for all of these things. It's one of those things that we built out of our own needs. And we polished it as open source. If it's good, you know, if people want to use it, you know, more power to them. And there's a couple of apps using it, but it's, there are relatively few. Today it has, like I said, a WPF backend, a Mac backend, and Linux backend. We're hoping to do a Windows 8 backend as well, a WinRT backend for it, so you can share more code across these platforms. So that's kind of the first cross-platform toolkit. And that one is aimed at desktop computing. The other two are they're mostly for building applications running on mobile. One of them is called Monocross, and the other one is called MVVM Cross. And they're both originated from Monocross. It's an MVVM pattern. You still need to do a little bit of glue on each operating system to be native, but you get to share a lot of your code between Android and iOS and Windows Phone and even the web. One of those even renders web pages. So we like the idea. We're not actually involved in any of those two, but they seem to be pretty popular among developers targeting mobile platforms.
Let me back up and get a little bit of the structure. What is the relationship between Mono and Xamarin?
So Mono is an open source project. I started that about a decade ago, maybe 10, 11 years ago. And it was developed initially for our own startup. We had a company called Zemian, which was acquired by Novell about 2 years after we started Mono. And then Novell incubated Mono for many years, but it was always an open source effort. So we always got contributions from external developers, despite the fact that Novell was pouring resources into it. We also got a lot of external contributors. And then, of course, there's this gigantic gift from Microsoft where Microsoft has open sourced some very sizable chunks of their .NET stack. And we've been integrating those pieces whenever we get a chance. Xamarin, on the other hand, so what happened is that Novell basically terminated its investment in Mono in 2011. And what we did is basically we got together the whole team and we founded a company. We founded a company with the entire Mono team from Novell and a bunch of new people. And we launched a company that would specialize on bringing Mono to mobile devices. So that's what we specialize on, iOS and Android. And the majority of the Mono contributors that used to work at Novell work for us. So it just happens that our focus tends to be more mobile than anything else. But we continue to take contributions and we continue to maintain the open source stack, even if it's not part of our products. So that's really the difference. Xamarin is just a company that that hired the original Mono team, and we kind of decided to focus on the mobile space.
Okay, and I got to ask, what's the relationship with Monkeys?
Oh, it actually goes back many, many years. Our first company, the company that Nan Friedman and myself founded in 1999, it was called Helix Code, and you know, we're big in evolution, we're big in science and evolutionary psychology and DNA and all of that stuff, right? So all of our products were themed appropriately. So we had Evolution, our server was called DNA, our mail server was called tRNA, you know. So kind of the theme was very much, you know, Darwinian in the company. And the monkey kind of stuck, the theme of the monkey kind of stuck in the, and, you know, although technically it's an image that from the Zeemian days, really for the Linux desktop, kind of the monkey has sticked with us, over various iterations. So we ended up with the monkey for Mono. Mono means actually monkey in Spanish. Then the guys running this conference, Monkey Space, kind of ran with the theme as well. But there's really no strong association. It was just kind of a theme that we had 10 years ago, and it's just kind of stayed in our circle. And I have to say, I like it. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, monkeys are very good, so there is that.
It's very apt. If I were a developer today who was looking at building an iOS application, would Mono offer me an alternative to building in Apple tools, or is it supplemental to that, or help me get my head around how it fits in?
Yeah, so it's actually complementary. You do need to get from Apple the underlying SDK, so that is the system libraries, the tools to sign your executables, the tools to deploy to your device. So you do obtain that from Apple. And then on top of that, you run our IDE. It's called Mono Develop. And you basically, you know, you go to the IDE, you click File New, you select your kind of project that you want to create, an iPad app or an iPhone app or universal app. And the next thing you know, you're in a project that will launch on your simulator on the device. So you're writing C# code and it's running on simulator or device. And so that's it, really. It's that's what we offer. We let you run C# code and write C# code for iPhone. And we think that the benefits are for iOS developers are pretty fantastic, because Objective-C is a little bit of a loosely typed language. So you know, a lot of the APIs in Objective-C, you need to provide them with them dictionaries, and how the API behaves depends on what you send in those dictionaries. And they're C-based dictionaries, so you need to know what keys to send, you need to know what values to send. It usually takes a bunch of trips to the documentation to get this done. And with C#, what we did is we turned all of those into strongly typed objects. So there's really never any guesswork as to what values you can pass, how do you need to wrap those values. You just say, for example, when you're recording, you say sample rate equals 44,000, and you don't need to worry about the keys, the boxing, any of that stuff. So that's really what it is. What you do is you write C# code, you consume our strongly typed APIs, and those strongly typed APIs are essentially the same thing that Windows RT does with their language projections. So if you think about the Windows RT language projections, we essentially have the same technology, but instead we project the Objective-C APIs to C#. Does that make sense? And of course we put some, we C#ify things a little bit so that they're more pleasant to use.
That actually, I love that explanation, like, because that helps me think about, that's a different way than I've pictured it in the past, but it completely makes sense to look at it as projections the same way as WinRT works.
Yeah, and similar, you guys have the advantage, and I mean by you guys, I mean Windows, you guys have the advantage that you had a chance to basically define what the projection was going to be, and there was a tight collaboration between the WinRT team and the .NET team to make the projections work the way that you want it. In this case, Apple defined some APIs and we basically had to step in and define the projection ourselves. So it's not an automatic process like it is for WinRT. It involves a human to review the API and define, make sure that the Objective-C API maps to something that follows the .NET design, the framework design guidelines. So you want the API to feel and behave in a .NET way, right? So there's a little bit of human intervention that needs to take place to make sure that the API, that the projection is correct.
But let me go back to the file new project. You said that I start with the iOS SDK, and then I open up the Mono development environment, and I'm programming in C#. What am I using for my controls and my layout?
You use the, this is a very good question. So, So it goes back to what I said. You get the C# BCL, so system, system IO, link, system XML, serializers, system data, all that stuff. But when it comes to the UI, you use the language projection that I was talking about. So on iOS, your main screen, is hosted by this object called the UI window. And the UI window, the way that you present information in the UI window is through this concept that iOS has called view controllers. A view controller is an object that is responsible for everything that is displayed on your screen. So the first thing that you need to do, when you create your application is you create your window and you associate the initial view controller. And that's typically, for example, if it's a Twitter app, you will have a tab bar controller. And that one has multiple items on the bottom that you can select from, you know, messages to replies to search and options, etc. So at that point, what you do need to do is essentially consume this API. So you would say stuff like new UI tab bar controller, and this controller takes, nested controller. So you would pass, for example, new timeline controller, new replies controller, search controller, and so on. So you build your application out of nested controllers, and that's what you have to do. So basically, if you look at an Objective-C sample, there's pretty much a one-to-one correspondence between the types and members of Objective-C to the C# ones. Modulo the fact that we, you know, clean up the API to be more suitable for C# consumption.
So I just have to wonder, you know, you've got all these different stacks on all layers that you're managing. You're cross-compiling code, you've got these different shim layers, you've got different UI layers, which, you know, you don't necessarily write, but you have to think about. And so I'm just wondering how you manage all that. Like, do you have intense build processes? Do you have tons of tests that go out and make sure that when you change something at a compiler, you know, you add in support for sometimes pretty low-level stuff like async support or things like that? And then how do you make sure that, you know, works all the way up through all these different platforms you support?
Right. So, I mean, so it's actually not as complicated as it sounds. Again, a lot of this stems from the fact that Mono itself has basically given up on cloning Microsoft high-level APIs. So what that means is that we focus mostly on the runtime compilers and core libraries, and we have a very extensive test suite. I mean, a couple of years ago, we were very proud that we probably had the largest open source test suite of any other, you know, compared to any other open source project. I don't know if that is still the case, but we used to have it. You know, 5 years ago, we were very early adopters of extensive test suites for compilers, system tests, unit tests, and all of those kinds of things. So, you know, we have a very long, you know, we have a very old tradition of testing Mono very extensively. So when you add a feature, we end up testing it on multiple platforms. So we run continuous build systems on a variety of platforms, from Unix to Solaris to macOS to Windows to iOS and Android. So that takes care of the core libraries. The UI pieces are really very platform specific. The iOS ones, the entire iOS stack is just for iOS, right? So we only need to test that stuff on iOS. And the same thing goes for Android. The Android stack is very, very platform specific. And we only test that stuff on Android. So we have a traditional unit testing. So we run those. We use a couple of very cute, testing frameworks. So we actually, every time that there's a build of Mono, we run a series of sample applications that we have for both Android and iOS. So we have a cute little farm of, you know, it's a startup farm, so it doesn't look as impressive as, you know, those pictures you see from Google, but, you know, we have our little farm of, iPads and iPhones and Galaxy Nexuses and Nexus this and Nexus that, running all of our tests continuously. So that's how we do that. But from a developer perspective, it is actually very simple. When you decide to build an iOS application, you basically are using iOS APIs, and your focus is really that. I would say that the majority of our developers today, they have some Windows experience. So when they approach building an app for iOS, if they want to share their code down the line for Android or for Windows Phone, they kind of, you know, they have their abstraction in mind of what they want to use. some of the most prolific guys are the kind of guy that produced things like MVVM Cross or Monocross, and that helped them, write the code once and customize for each platform. And other people basically just write up the UI from the ground up and just keep their shared code on separate libraries. So a lot of people are basically just doing engine. So you're syncing, you're saving, connecting to web services, storing on databases. They keep all of that in cross-platform code, and basically they rebuild the UI from the ground up on each platform that they support. So those are kind of the two approaches. One is you put your whole business logic on a library, or the other approach is you try to put some of that in your model and try to use a MVVM pattern to do the rest of the work for you. So it's not as sophisticated as you think. It's actually quite simple.
Where does Windows Phone 8 fit into all of this?
So we don't really have a product for Windows Phone 8. And the reason is Windows Phone 8 comes with .NET. So there's really no major role for Mono to play on Windows Phone 7 or 8. Microsoft has a .NET implementation in how they use. That said, there's one of the sub projects of the Mono effort is this stack called Mono Game. And Mono Game is an open source XNA implementation. And this is, to me, it's really funny because I don't understand what happened inside Microsoft, but Microsoft basically did not ship XNA for Windows RT. So the Mono Game community has been incredibly excited to filling the gap. There's hundreds of XNA developers, and when they were faced with the options of rewriting their software from the ground up and make it run only on Windows 8, or have the code run on Windows Phone and Windows 8 and other platforms, they contributed to the Mono Game effort. So now we have this fantastic stack, Mono Game, which is a very, very complete XNA 2D and 3D stack that people can use to build games. So I guess that is the closest that we have to a story on Windows. The fact that Microsoft didn't really ship an XNA stack and we kind of, the community kind of stepped up and delivered it.
And Miguel, how do you spend your days? Are you sitting at a computer coding, or are you organizing this effort or running the company? What's your day like?
So the company is actually run by Nat Friedman, my co-founder, and he takes care of most of the, he's a CEO, so he's in charge of sales and marketing and those sort of things. I am in charge of engineering. So I would say most of my time is spent coordinating what we're going to launch. So features that go into our runtime, features that go into our iOS product or Android product, or cross-platform products. We have a library called Xamarin Mobile that abstracts many non-very interesting pieces of every platform. So we have contacts, access to your address book, geolocation, GPS. So it's one API that runs on Windows, runs on Windows 8, runs on Windows Phone, runs on Android and iOS and soon macOS. So I basically coordinate the engineering, and every once in a while, when I get a chance, I write a little bit of code for iOS. That's probably the platform where I contribute the most directly, or the core Mono runtime.
And what do you see the future holding, the short-term future for Xamarin?
World domination. No. it's incredibly exciting. There's nothing as exciting as the mobile space right now. Surface is out. I like my Surface. I like that we have a very strong story of code reuse between Windows and iPhone and Android. Unlike the HTML approach, our approach is to take advantage of everything the native platform has to offer. If you want to do HTML, you can also do HTML with Mono, but really the big exciting thing is being able to use hardware accelerated every single bit of iOS or Android. Android has RenderScript, very sophisticated GPU acceleration framework. iOS has Core Animation. It's kind of a delight to use native APIs. They just do a lot more than HTML can do. So it is, I'm constantly fascinated by the kind of apps that people are building with iOS and Android. I love downloading apps from the store and seeing what little tweak or what little clever thing they did with those APIs. So, we're very focused on improving our products. There's a bunch of people that have expressed interest in us supporting these or supporting that or expanding our language support here and there or doing more with Visual Studio. So there's a lot on our plates. We started about 9 months ago. And we said we're just going to add this little feature, and that little feature has escalated into a major product launch. So we're launching that thing next year, and it's a universe of goodness. We're very, very proud of what we achieved with this, and it can only get better from here. We're very excited about this space.